Well, welcome, everybody. Once again, this is your Joint Committee on Transportation Preservation and Modernization. For the record, this is May 31st, 2017, and starting tonight, we really go live on this thing. I wanted to start out, for those who have their computers here, the hot off the press, we're just getting copies right now. The Dash 3 amendments is what we'll go through tonight, and they are online. Also online are some charts that demonstrate graphically where the money from the various sources will go to. So we have that. And I did want to talk about the schedule, and obviously this is tentative. We're going to start with an information session tonight, and what we intend to do tonight, since we just got the copies, is have Legislative Council and Legislative Revenue go through the bill section by section so you know what's there. Then on the next week, on the 5th, we will start with invited public testimony, and we'll be getting in staff will be getting in contact with you at the groups to go through that. And we plan to continue to have public testimony on the 5th, the 6th, and the 7th. On the 8th, we intend to have a committee work session. And committee members, what we hope you would do as you look through the bill here tonight, if you have comments or suggestions on changes, amendments, whatever, please send those by email to Patrick, our committee administrator. We'll try to deal with those. Then the week of the 13th, what we hope will happen on the 8th is we will come up with conceptual agreement on the bill. Then we need to give the attorneys and revenue time to put the changes together. Then the week of the 13th, we will have a work session, and hopefully we'll be moving a bill. The goal has always been to try to have something out to the House by the end of that week, the 15th. So that's still our target, although we have a little room to move on that. So that's generally the overall schedule. What you have, has everybody got a copy now? What you have in front of you is the Dash 3 amendments. Those amendments simply replicate the discussions that we've had over the last 5 or 6 meetings, actually. I don't think you'll see anything new in there. The accountability discussions that we have been your suggestions, I believe, have been amended into the bill. Representative Olson has looked at that, as well as his committee members, and I think that that's there. But obviously, if it's not, we hope we'll resolve that by the 8th. You also have in front of you some charts. Some of the members have asked at very time where the money would go, who gets what, and I think there's a concern on equity and all of that. So this demonstrates to you project money and the overall money, where the increases go. Again, this is only the road funds. This is not the transit money, which I think probably replicates pretty closely what you would find on the rest of it, although we have not looked at that specifically. So I think that's it. Excuse me?
Yeah, two representatives.
I know that. Is anybody, any question on that before we go forward? I know.
Yes.
Representative Smith, you had some comments.
Yeah, no, just Mr. Co-Chair. Colleagues in public, really quick, I just wanted to declare a potential conflict of interest. I want to get it on the record. I do economic development for a living. I'm a member of a limited liability company that does work throughout all of Eastern Oregon. And so I just want, as we have a conversation, that be noted.
Okay. Thank you very much, Representative. Senator Taylor?
Thank you, Chair Bauer. First of all, thank you. I'm so excited to finally have this and to go through it, and I think this is so great that we're moving forward. I just wanted you to, if you could just finish the train of thought you were having about the transit piece, about seeing how it's distributed in a way for the public to understand where the transit dollars would go. I felt like you were saying something, and then you were finished and got interrupted.
What I was trying to say is that we had a general formula, but I haven't seen how those distribute out.
Okay.
If that makes sense, we certainly can try to get that.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else before we start? It's 298 pages of text. A lot of charts. to be honest, none of us have read this yet, except the three people down there. So we're going to ask them to go through it. A lot of work, and a lot of work that all of you have spent on this. This is, I hope you appreciate, this is not the way transportation funding usually is done in the state. This is probably the most transparent project that we've ever seen, for the good and the bad of it. Representative?
So, Mr. Co-Chair, because of the length of this bill, would you like us to hold our questions as folks go through it, and maybe we write them down and get them to you or get them to staff? Is that what you're suggesting?
You have a comment?
No, I was just saying that's...
I think that's what makes the most sense. We fully understand that there's no way that you've had a chance to digest this. It's unfair to ask you to comment on it beforehand. So the point tonight is merely to have Elsie walk through it. I guess if you have a question as they're going through it, we certainly should get those answered in general. But again, as you have a chance to look through, about 298 pages, you know, probably takes a couple of nights before you fall asleep. So we'll begin. Who wants to lead off? Is it Heidi or Ellen?
I will.
You will. Thank you, Heidi. By the way, I want you all to know the amazing amount of work, you can see it, that this team has done looking at different things and changing our minds a number of times, exploring new turf. They've done an exemplary load of work, and we really owe them a big debt for what they've been able to accomplish. And with that, take it away, Heidi.
Chair Beyer, Chair McEwen, members of the committee, my name is Heidi Elliott. I'm a senior deputy with the Office of Legislative Counsel, and I'm here tonight with my co-counsel, Alan.
Oh, hi. Co-Chair Beyer and McEwen, members of the committee, I'm Alan Davis, Senior Deputy Legislative Counsel.
I'm Pat Mazin-Maddock, Legislative Revenue Office.
And we are here tonight to walk through the bill with you. We took a simple one-page, six-line bill.
Heidi, could you pull the mic just a little bit closer, please?
And turned it into the -3 amendments that you see before you tonight. I will start off by giving you an overview of the bill, and then we'll start by going section by section, and Alan will jump in around sections 89. Just to start off, sections 1 through 30 cover the topic of accountability. Sections 31 through 76 cover highway maintenance and preservation. Multimodal is covered by sections 77 to 78. Traffic congestion and freight mobility by sections 89 through 122. Public transportation and public safety, sections 122A. through 131, and finally the remainder of the sections 132 to 145. And let's begin. Section 1 starts us off with accountability. It is simply the definition section for the accountability sections in the chapter. Section 2 discusses and amends 184.612. It is the OTC, Oregon Transportation Commission, formation section. In this section, we now say that a member serves at the pleasure of the governor. So the governor may remove a member after hearing and public notice. The chairperson may now appoint the vice chairperson, and the OTC is now authorized to hire employees. In Section 5, we amend 184.619. This is the Oregon Transportation Commission's general rulemaking authority. You'll see some new language, but it turns out the new language isn't really new. It's continuing existing authority. We just decided to consolidate the general rulemaking into one section. Section 6, the OTC functions, consolidates the Oregon Transportation Commission's functions and adds additional duties, such as specifying that the current long-range plan cover 20 years into the future, requiring coordination with other public bodies to develop plans for each mode of transportation and multimodal plans. And it includes the plans must include at least projects for 20 years into the future to maintain and develop the transportation infrastructure in the state. Section 8 authorizes the OTC to enter into an agreement with other public and private partners relating to the duties and functions of the commission and the department with regards to projects and research. Section 9 directs the commission to compile an inventory of the department's real property. And if they decide that the property is not going to be used in the foreseeable future. The department and the commission shall sell the property and use the proceeds for the highway fund. Section 10 creates the Continuous Improvement Advisory Committee. The committee will consist of members and staff of OTC, staff of the Department of Transportation, and transportation stakeholders. The committee is directed to advise the commission on ways to maximize efficiency of the department and develop key performance measures for each division of the department. The committee will report to the OTC each year on the status of key performance measures. In each non-numbered year, the commission will report to the new Joint Committee on Transportation, which we will get to in Section 26. Section 11, measuring the condition of the transportation infrastructure, directs the commission to develop a set of uniform standards for the measurement of transportation infrastructure owned by the state, counties, and the cities. Requires cities and counties to submit biannual report to the commission on the condition of each transportation infrastructure, and directs the commission to report on the state transportation infrastructure to the Legislative Assembly and to the Joint Committee on Transportation. Section 12, the website, directs the commission to develop a website and specifies the minimum contents on the website, such as projects in the STIP, transportation infrastructure measurement reports, internal audit reports, and links to other project websites. Section 13, cost-benefit analysis, directs the department to conduct written benefit cost-benefit analysis of projects before submitting the projects for approval by the commission. It specifies the criteria for the cost-benefit analysis. Section 14, this is the current OTC STIP criteria list. It removes obsolete criteria and adds new criteria for consideration by the commission in considering projects for the STIP. Section 15, the internal auditor, expands the duties of the current internal auditor, directs the internal auditor to submit final reports to the commission, and directs the commission to post those reports on its website. Section 18, directs the commission to perform appear before the Joint Legislative Audit Committee and before the Joint Committee on Transportation. Section 19, the current statute that creates the Department of Transportation, where we consolidate the department's general duties and expand on the duties. For example, the department must now provide strategic planning for at least 20 years into the future, promote coordination between different modes of transportation, and promote coordination of major transportation projects between the state, counties, and the cities. Section 20, Director of Transportation, directs the commission to appoint the director after consulting with the governor, and provides that the director serves at the pleasure of the commission. Section 25, the director's duties, it expands on the current director's duties. Section 26, creates the Joint Committee on Transportation, provides membership of 5 members from the Senate, 5 members of the House as a current and ongoing committee. Section 27 describes the committee's duties, and Section 27A directs the Legislative Fiscal Office to assist the Joint Committee on Transportation in the performance of its duties. Sections 28 through 30 are conforming amendments. Now we move on to the highway maintenance, preservation, and seismic update. In Section 32, we create a surcharge on the registration fees. The surcharge will be based on the miles per gallon that a vehicle is powered. And it begins with a $15 surcharge flat fee and $100 for electric vehicles. And after 2019, it goes on to increase by 5 years, and then ends increases in 2026. Sections 34 through 36, the conforming amendments to the current registration fees. Section 37 also provides for a tiered surcharge increase for the title fees for passenger vehicles, instruments, and transfer. Section 40
Hold on, let us catch up with you. There's a lot of pages in between.
Yes.
What page are you?
Sections 40 through 47 increases the fuel tax. It increases the fuel tax by 6 cents in 2018 and increases by...
Mr. Chair,
slow down a second. What page, Heidi, are you?
I don't know. I'm just going through my outline.
Oh, okay.
Section 40 starts on page 118. 118.
Thank you.
118. In order to do a rollout over 10 years, we have to double, in some cases, quintuple amend. So that's why there are so many pages in between. To show our changes as we go.
Okay.
So when I get it, are we ready?
Section 39.
Is everybody at 118?
Section 39. The applicability clause. And then we have conforming amendments in 803, 09, the current title fee section. It makes related title fee increases. Sections 40 through 47 are the fuel tax increases. 6 cents for the first year, 2 cents every 2 years until 2026. And then we move on. Because the Constitution requires that light vehicles and heavy vehicles pay their proportionate share. Whenever we increase the fuel tax, the registration fees, or the title fees on passenger light vehicles, we also need to make proportionate increases to heavy vehicles. Excuse me. Those are reflected in the amendments too. It will be shown in the future. Sections 48 through 71.
Okay, where's 71 in?
Come on.
121.
Section 71 is on page 166.
166.
And this is where we get to the part where we get to spend the money. So have all the revenues raised from the registration fees, the title fees, and the gas tax. It will be distributed 50% to the state, 50% to the counties, and 20% to the cities. Of the money going to the state, $10 million off the top will go to highway safety. $200 million will be used for regional projects across the state. And the remaining amount is split 40% for bridges, 30% for seismic improvements to highways and bridges, 24% for maintenance and replacement of state highway pavement culverts, and 6% for state highway maintenance, preservation and safety improvements. It also goes on to describe the regions in the state and the projects that each region will receive as a result of the revenues raised. In 71B, we describe of the $10 million that's going to Safe Routes for Schools, which is the program that improves sidewalks and other improvements for kids walking or biking to school. Yep. And 71B describes certain projects for that first year that will be completed and then gives the remaining monies to a new matching grant program that will be discussed in Section 123. Section 71C is a project for Milton Clearwater. Section 71D is Connect Oregon. Connect Oregon is a current program. It provides grants for modes of transportation that do not qualify for highway funding, such as rail, marine, aviation, and biped. In 71D, we describe certain projects that will be funded with the amount raised for Connect Oregon. And
question? I just want to make sure that I heard you correctly. We're actually now describing what projects are going to be funded by Connect Oregon?
For the first year, yes.
Okay.
1972, we amend ORS 366805, the small city allocation, and we increase that allocation from 500,000 to 2.5 million. This is for cities with a population of fewer than 5,000, and require the director to establish a small city advisory committee to review applications submitted by small cities. Requires the Director of Transportation to consult with the League of Oregon Cities before appointing members to the advisory committee. And there should be at least one member from each of the five regions of the state. Section 73 amends 366772, the small county allocation increase. Increases the small county allocation by $5 million. This allocation goes to counties with fewer than 200,000 registered vehicles. And Section 74 is a conforming amendment. Section 75 directs the Transportation Commission to conduct a study to determine whether users of vehicles powered by different means are paying their fair share, and if not, provide recommendations to the legislative body for legislation. Section 76 provides a sunset for the study. In Section 77, we go on to discuss multimodal transportation. As I mentioned before, Connect Oregon is a current program that provides funding for those projects that cannot be funded with heavy fund dollars. 77 provides $71.9 million in lottery bond proceeds for the Connect Oregon program. In Section 78, we expand on the description of the monies in the fund. Because now, not only will we have lottery bond proceeds, we'll also have revenue from the bicycle excise tax monies from the parks account and a portion of the vehicle privilege tax that will be discussed later. We also remove public transit from the program because public transit will be funded by other means discussed later in the draft. In Section 79, we require public bodies to provide a 30% match, and private bodies must provide a 50% match. In Section 80, we split the program into two parts. Connect Oregon Part 1, which is the program that we currently know it, and then Connect Oregon Part 2. Part 2 is targeted towards projects of statewide significance that maintain or enhance rail, aviation, and marine. And it specifies selection criteria specific to those kinds of transportation. Section 80A is a conforming amendment. As is Section 81. In Section 83, we describe the distribution of the monies in the Connect Oregon Fund. 54% of the fund will be going to Connect Oregon Part 1. 47% is for projects involving air, marine, or rail. 7% is for bike ped projects. And 1% for administration. Connect Oregon Part 2 receives the other 47%. Section 84. $4 million each biennium will come from the park subaccount for bike and pedestrian projects that meet the constitutional requirements. In Section 85. We require the commission to streamline the Oregon application process and report to the Joint Committee on Transportation on its efforts to do so. Section 86 through 88 provide funding through the vehicle fuel tax paid by voters. 2 cents of that will now be used for dredging. And now, finally, the moment we've all been waiting for. Alan gets to talk.
Okay. Kutcher Beyer, the CUN members of the committee. Section 89, starting with Section 89, we're dealing with revenue for traffic congestion relief, freight mobility, and Connect Oregon. Section 89 provides definitions for three tax programs that I will now describe. In Section 90, there's a privilege tax for the privilege of engaging in the business of selling motor vehicles at retail in the state. It is 0.75%. It applies to new and used motor vehicles, and it applies only to dealer sales, not to sales by individuals. Section 91 is a use tax, so it's it falls under the compensatory tax doctrine, so that in order to prevent evasion of the privilege tax by people going to other states, it has a use tax when they bring vehicles from the other state for use in the state. And according to the U.S. Supreme Court doctrine, it has to be identical to the tax it's paired with, the privilege tax. So it's also 0.75% on the retail sale of new and used motor vehicles and applies to dealer sales only. Section 92 is an excise tax on the retail sale of bicycles, which in this case it's applies only to new bicycles. They're bicycles for adults generally, or actually tricycles for adults, and or bicycles that are worth sell for more than $500. Section 93 is the collection of the use tax. Section 94 is a resale certificate, and basically if you are buying the vehicle for resale, you get a resale certificate. You do not owe the tax. It's to prevent the pyramiding of the tax. 95 is refunds. 96 is the deposit of the revenue from the privilege and use taxes. These are the pair taxes, but the constitutional use limitations of Article 9, Section 3A apply to one and not the other. So the use tax is a tax described in Article 9, Section 3A. So that money has to go into the state highway fund. The privilege tax, however, is being sent 10% to Connect Oregon Fund and 90% to the Congestion Relief Fund. However, you will see the 90%, we've put in the same use restriction language that appears in Article 9, Section 3A. However, it's only statutory here, so it could be not withstood or amended, unlike the constitutional restrictions. The under Section 97, the excise tax on bicycles goes to the Connect Oregon Fund. 98, 99, and I'll be flying here, have to do with the collection, the administration, the collection, and the enforcement of the taxes. Which records, 102, 103. 104, 105, 106. So then on the other thing you should know is that we didn't have a copy of it either, so we had to prepare our remarks without page numbers or line numbers. So it's not much easier for us. So section 109.
Page 216, section 109.
Thank you, but I've got these flipped upside down. Okay. All right, so section 109, the privilege tax is imposed on the seller, so the purchaser wouldn't necessarily, we haven't specified whether the privilege tax is passed on to the purchaser or not. It may be or it may not be. They won't necessarily have anything to show. But the use tax, they should. And so at the DMV, we can enforce the use tax if they would have to show payment of the tax in order to title or register the vehicle. Section 111 is a moratorium on local governments imposing any of these three taxes. Section 112 provides for expedited review. As I said, I mean, it's our theory, we have some authority in our pocket, that the privilege tax is not a tax subject to Article 9, Section 3A. We provided in Section 112 for expedited review of this issue to the Supreme Court. If, and it's the person who, a challenger will have 30 days after the effective date to file. If they do, and it will go directly to the Supreme Court, the decision is limited to that question of whether the privileged tax is subject to Article 9, Section 3A. If the court determines that it is, then the entire bill is repealed. In Section 113, it's a similar mechanism in the case of the referral to the people of the state of the bill or any portion of it. And if any portion of the bill is voted down by the people in a referendum, then the entire bill is repealed. So let's see, 115, 116, just conforming amendments, 117, 118. All right, so 119, which begins on page 222. This is where we, and it's 119A through, I think it's O. Right, so there's a great big carrot in the bill allowing all this stuff in. So these are where we create congestion relief districts, and basically there are eight metropolitan planning organizations created under federal law within the state. Each one has a policy committee, and we establish in 119A, we establish each MPO as a congestion relief district, and the policy committee of each of the MPOs as the governing body of the congestion relief, the corresponding congestion relief district. We have set up in subsection 4, we've set up a legal firewall between the MPO and the congestion relief district formed out of the MPO, and between the policy committee and the governing, the policy committee functioning as policy committee of the MPO and as the governing body of the congestion relief district, so that they can't, one, the duty of one is not the duty of the other, even though they may be the same people. The liabilities of one are not the liabilities of the other. The money of one is not the money of the other. So that, for instance, in the Metro Congestion Relief District, JPACT, if they're having a meeting as the governing body of the Metro Congestion Relief District, they can't turn on the lights on the MPO's dime. Right, there has to be a complete legal separation of them. So that's what we do. And of course, it doesn't apply to the extent that the MPO and the district enter into an express written agreement for any purpose. 119B lays out the powers of the congestion relief districts. And in subsection 2, the congestion relief district does not have a permanent rate limit for operating taxes. It's not an ad valorem property taxing district, may not impose a tax on property of any kind, and it does not have inherent authority to impose taxes. So, let's see. Right. Then 119C. This applies only to the Metro Congestion Relief District. And on or before December 31st, 2017, the JPACT, as the governing body of the Metro Congestion Relief District, may approve the following projects in whole and not in part. They have to accept them all or none of them. In Section 119D, either 30 days after approving the slate of projects or before December 31st, 2017, JPACT may impose the following schedule of fuel taxes. So it's every 2 years, it's $0.03 fuel tax and $5 registration fee within the district. And we've specified in subsection 2 that JPACT, as the governing body of the Metro Congestion Relief District, has to impose the taxes by majority vote of its voting members without submitting the question of the fuel taxes, registration fees, or the rates to the electors of the Metro Congestion Relief District. So it's not, they can't refer it out to the electors, and the state is not imposing it. The governing body, the JPACT, the governing body of the Metro Congestion Relief District, will be imposing those taxes. Or actually, they're authorized to. If they want the projects, they will have to impose those taxes. Section 119E is if they adopt the project, approve the projects, adopt the taxes, then they enter into an intergovernmental agreement with the Department of Transportation to administer, collect, and enforce the taxes and registration fees. And then they enter into an IGA with the Oregon Transportation Commission to oversee the design and construction of the projects that they approved. Under subsection 4, the costs of each of the projects will be funded first by federal funds, second by revenue from tolls collected for the project, and then third in equal shares by money, state money, from the motor vehicle privilege tax and monies in the Metro Congestion Relief District subfunds, which is where the fuel tax and registration fees go. And that money is continuously appropriated to the Oregon Transportation Commission for either paying for the projects with cash or for pledging them as security for bonds for the projects. Let's see, where are we? Oh, I see, right. And then in subsection 119F establishes the Congestion Relief Fund. And the structure is basically that there's going to be the main fund for state monies, and then each MPO district will have its own sub-fund. In 119G, on or before December 31st, 2021, a county may request to the Legislative Assembly to be established as a congestion relief district, but it's only a county that's outside the territory of all the other congestion relief districts, which, you know, would make it a rural county. The district formed out of a county, however, does not have any of the constitutional or statutory authority of a county. So again, there will be that legal separation between the two entities, though they're the same entity. Section 119H, on or before December 31st, 2021, this is what allows the other seven congestion relief districts to propose a program of projects. So the Metro Congestion Relief District projects and taxes are laid out in the bill. With respect to the other districts, there is a process for proposing a program of projects. There are some suggestions. They're not binding and they're not exclusive. And under subsection 6, once the governing body of the congestion relief district approves the program, they submit it to OTC, which does a high-level review. And if they approve it, then they submit it as a recommendation for legislation to the Legislative Assembly. Section 119I is some additional projects for the Metro Congestion Relief District. And then sections 119 J, K, L, and M have to do with bonding of the congestion relief projects. However, late breaking news, we had an hour-long conference call at 3:30 with Mazin, LRO, the Treasury, ODOT, Bond Council, and Department of Justice, and so we are reworking the bond, these four bond provisions with the best advice we can get. So then, where? Then finally, 119O is an appropriation for JPAC acting as the governing body of the Metro Congestion Relief District, precisely because of what I said, they can't spend JPAC's money. So until we also put in that 0.5% of the district revenue will go to the governing body of the district for their operating expenses, but those won't be coming in immediately. So there's an appropriation here, basically, so that JPACT, as a governing body of the Metro Congestion Relief District, can turn on the lights when they have meetings. That is my part. Is there any more?
Section 120.
Is that me? 120. Okay. Back to Heidi.
Section 120. We direct the Oregon Transportation Commission to establish a traffic congestion relief program. As part of that program, the commission will apply and seek approval from the Federal Highway Administration if required to implement value pricing and tolling along certain highways. The purpose of the value pricing and the tolling pay for certain projects, such as widening the segment of I-205 from Stafford Road to Oregon City by adding one travel lane in each direction and replacing the Abernathy Bridge. It's also going to pay for, along with other monies from the state and the Congestion Relief Fund, for the active traffic management project, the Interstate 205 corridor bottleneck project, the SIP lane pilot project, and the value pricing and pre-construction tolling setup project. In Section 121, we create the Task Force on Mega Transportation Projects. The Task Force is directed to study how the state selects and approves its mega transportation projects, and we define what a mega transportation project is. Section 122, we sunset the Task Force. And in Sections 122A, Alan will begin to explain the taxes on public on wages for public transit.
Oh, right. So there's a, yeah, there's a 122A. A. Sorry. Forgot. Right. So there's a tax on employees, on employee wages. It's 0.1%. It is, the mechanism is a withholding tax, similar to withholding for federal and state income taxes. So it's collected by the Department of Revenue directly from the employers. And that's pretty much it.
In Section 122M, this money is deposited into a new statewide transportation improvement fund. And it provides that the money's in the fund be used to finance investments and improvements in public transportation services, and it provides that the monies may not be used for light rail. In Section 122N, we have definitions where we define a qualified entity. Those are counties with no mass transit or transportation district, mass transit districts, transportation districts, and federally recognized Indian tribes. Section 122O, the distribution of the monies, directs commission to distribute the monies as follows. 85% from qualified entities, and for the first year, they should each receive at least $100,000. 10% will also go to qualified entities for competitive grants, but these qualified entities don't include mass transit. 4% will be used to improve inner city connections between communities. And if the amounts are insufficient to pay for all costs, then the commission shall make the funds available based on a competitive grant basis. And 1% will go to the Department of Transportation for administrative costs. In section 122P, if a qualified entity receives a share of 85% of the distribution, the entity must submit a public transportation improvement plan to the commission. The plan must identify how the funds it received the previous year were used to do the following: increase bus service in communities with a high percentage of low-income houses, procure buses powered by natural gas or electricity in areas with low population, implement programs to reduce fares in communities with a high percentage of low-income households, and expand bus routes and bus service to reach communities with a high percentage of low-income households. Section 122Q, appointment of local advisory committees, directs the governing body of each recipient to appoint an advisory committee. And the purpose of the committee is to advise and assist the governing body in prioritizing disbursements of the monies received. Section 122R, the recipients owe to report to the Department of Transportation. Section 122S, the commission is to report to the Joint Committee on Transportation on implementation and outcomes. And Section 122T provides an operative date for Section 122P. Section 123, Safe Routes to School Matching Grant Program. There is currently a Safe Routes to School program. This expands the program to create a matching grant program within the current program. Provides that the department or the commission may provide grants. Recipients must provide 40%. But it does allow recipients to provide 25% if a school is in a city with a population of fewer than 5,000, or and the project reduces hazards within a safety corridor as defined by the commission. The priority for the projects are for projects within a quarter mile of pre-K through 8 in any combination, or K through 12 schools. The project must fit within a plan developed by cities and counties with school districts to identify barriers and hazards to children walking or bicycling to and from school. The monies from the grants should be used to improve sidewalks, reduce vehicle speeds, improve pedestrian and bicycle crossings, create and improve bicycle lanes, and improve traffic diversion. Section 124 provides that the monies and the Safe Routes to School Fund should be used for the current program and the new matching grant program. Small water, please.
Yeah, you bet.
Thank you. Sections 125 to 128. Currently, the transformation, this is about roadside rest areas. The Travel Information Council, manages a number of rest areas. And in those sections, we expand the duties of the Travel Information Council. Thank you so much. And also provide them with additional funding to manage the additional rest areas. And in section 129, we direct the council, after consulting with the Department of Transportation and State Parks, to develop a plan for transitioning management of rest areas. And section 130, we direct the state agencies transferring the rest areas to the council to provide the council with certain information at least 6 weeks or 6 months for the transfer. Under the home stretch, section 132 clarifies that uses of the monies that previously went to the city of Damascus for highway funds should be used by Clackamas County for the roads within the previous bounds of the city.
There is no city anymore.
That's
where
we're taking it.
Do you want an explanation or
no?
No. Okay.
Okay.
We were just chuckling.
Okay. Section 133, overpass screening. It eliminates the required minimum number of overpass fences that the Department of Transportation is required to construct each year. Section 134, locally known as Orphan Highways, it transfers Powell Boulevard to the Portland Territorial Highway to Lane County, Delta Highway to the Department of Transportation, and Cornelius Pass Road to the Department of Transportation. Sections 135 to 137 are about salting and plowing our roads after snowfall. It applies to the department after at least 2 inches of snow has fallen within a 12-hour period. It applies to state highways. And it directs that cities of a population of 160,000 or more shall plow and salt at least 25% of the vital city highways as determined by each city. And if driving conditions remain dangerous after 24 hours, the city shall salt at least 35% of its vital city highways, again determined by each city. Sections 138 to 141 provide that a certain amount of the money is collected from the retail electricity consumers, the public purpose charge, may be used for transportation electrification, otherwise known as charging stations for electrification. Section 142 provides repeals for conforming amendments. Section 143 abolishes the Urban Trail Fund, which has about a little over $6,000 in it, and transfers that money to the Connect Oregon program. Section 144 is your effective date, and Section 145 provides that the captions have no legal effect. And we're done.
There we are. Cool. Okay. That's a lot to digest. General questions? It's a lot to digest, I understand. So we are.
I just have a question. So, and I appreciate walking through this, but is there going to be a table of contents that lists the sections? I mean, because I appreciate going through and talking about the sections, but what I'd like is something on the front that says those sections in that, so I can flip through the first six happens to try to figure out.
Patrick?
Mr. Representative Lively, staff is busily preparing a section by section which can include a table of contents.
Yes, I'm sorry. To borrow my pads.
By staff, I mean staff.
Somebody.
This staff is no help at all in that process. I just want to clarify.
Thank you.
Senator?
In the main, I think this reflects some of the consensus conversations that the committee had. I have to say that there were a few surprises, and I guess the question that I have is, given that the chairs and the vice chairs were in consultation as this was being put together, is there a unanimous opinion among the four of you about issues reflected in this draft? Apparently not.
To be very honest, this is the first time we've seen the complete draft as well. Staff has worked hard. We've worked to try and put all the pieces together in one place. It is our expectation that we need a little bit of work. That's why you got it. It should be viewed as the first draft, the first shot at it.
Okay, I think that's a very fair answer, and I just want to repeat what I think I heard, that you all haven't seen this in one place, that you were not necessarily of one mind on some of the additions, and that the committee is invited to comment on every aspect of the draft in front of us.
Certainly the last comment is absolutely true. The former comments, I hope we're close. I think we are, but again, we have just seen it for the first time as well.
Senator, can I comment on that?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think to clarify, Senator Johnson, I mean, if there's something that's missing,
that we missed, because we could have easily missed something, and that needs to be raised. If there's something that jumped out that we didn't necessarily know ourselves was in there or was something else, then we need to know that too. So it's both plus and minus on both sides, and that's the importance of getting the package so we know what we need to discuss. Because once again, we saw this as it was brought in this room and given to us.
And one other process question with your indulgence. You have invited the committee to comment to our professional staff. Mostly Mr. Brennan has been pushed in front of the bus, to use a transportation analogy. But I am looking at a whole room packed with the usual suspects. And I am wondering whether or not that invitation extends to all of them, and does Mr. Brennan become their clearinghouse as well? Is that the expectation as far as process? Or will they be weighing in on specific legal language, or with Mr. Malik on specific revenue? How are you going to do air traffic control for all of these guys?
It is our preference that all communications be in writing and to Patrick, so that we have it all in one place and we all get the same message, so that all of you can hear the same concerns. We will be inviting testimony and then having open testimony next Monday.
May I make a clarification? So, Mr. Chair, if possible, if people are providing input that they would like to have made public testimony that would be posted on OLIS, they can send it to me, but anything that what they send to me will be shared with the committee. Anything that they want to be made as part of the public record should be sent to the official committee email inbox, which is send to me, to my email, any comments that are directed towards the committee about this. Is that
okay?
Clear? Because there may be some people that want to submit input to the committee that don't want to make it public record, madam.
Oh, I think everybody ought to be on the record.
Yep. This is on the record.
We want to know what's
there.
Sure.
Yeah,
that makes it easy. And what Patrick gets, you're all getting.
Yeah, it would certainly be my preference that everything be on the record and that the record be available for scrutiny by the entire committee.
Again, we don't have a lot of time to deal with this. We got a couple of weeks. We will have testimony next week, starting Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Hopefully by Thursday the 8th, we will be in a position where we can get relative consensus about what the final bill ought to look like so we can give direction to council. That's where we're trying to go with this. It's been a long process, but we're running out of time. Representative Smith and then Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Kutcher. First of all, thank you for your leadership. Congratulations. I think you folks have done a great job putting a package together of this magnitude. Staff, great job. Matt, great job. There's one area I'm a little uneasy on. And I think we're missing a great opportunity. And let me share with you, I'm of the opinion, in for a penny, in for a pound at this point, if we're going to talk about transportation. And that's with our roadside rest areas. I think those are a tremendous asset for the state of Oregon. And I think ODOT has done the best job they can with the minimum resources they have. But if you've ever been to a state with a nice rest area, it makes an impression.
And the converse.
And the opposite, and that is correct. And I guess I'm a little bit sensitive to this because of where District 57 lies. It's an entry point from the state of Washington. And then all, obviously, Representative Bence's folks and many of your folks come back and forth to our area. And I utilize all these others, rest areas like the rest of us. I would hope, and I guess I'd request that perhaps leadership chairs could think about maybe appointing a small committee in the short period of time to see if we can look into, are there additional enhancements to this topic that perhaps in a bipartisan manner we could all agree to, and again, in a short period of time without slowing up the bill. But I really think we're missing an opportunity at this point in time to really enhance this area for the state of Oregon.
The co-chair said, would you like to chair it?
Well, I would love to serve on it, because I think I have some thoughts on that. But I just really think we're missing an opportunity.
Okay. That's worth thinking. We'll think about that.
Let me just give briefest examples. In Boardman, in Interstate 84, it's located about 2 miles down the freeway from Boardman after the legislature has put a significant investment into a visitor center.
That's a great center.
And there's no reason why we couldn't figure out how to collaborate so there's a mutual gain. But we can't do that unless we collaborate with the lead doctor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, a couple of things. First of all, this is an incredible document. It's just in its volume, but in its accuracy and in its reflecting of several months of work by this whole group and our staff. I'm very impressed. I wonder, though, before next Monday, when we start public testimony Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, is there possibility of a executive summary of, say, wow, you know, no more than 3 or 4 pages that would be available to the press and available to those people that want to come and talk to us Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday?
How long would that take?
Look at the staff.
I'm looking at staff. How long would that take?
By next Monday, it was the request.
Mm-hmm. Patrick says it can be done.
Good. I would really suggest that, because you hand even a reporter or anybody this, and they're going to freak out. So a good executive summary, not that this isn't really wonderful and accurate, but most people don't have the time to go through it. And I want the citizens, I want the people, and, you know, we're led by our press and our reporters. I want them to understand this, understand what we're doing, and to really speak decisively as to whether or not they think it's a good idea, or it needs to be modified.
Representative McLean.
Mr. Co-Chair, I think another part of that summary, it's important, I think, for everybody to understand, we've got a lot of language and a lot of policy in here that's not new. These are not all new words. And so maybe that summary or that package can identify what the new concept is or what the new funding device is, so that they don't think that, you know, this is all new stuff. And we also asked Heidi to reorganize. And so there's been some of it that's just, you know, put together in a little different way than maybe they've seen it before. But that, I think it's important to talk about what's new and what's not.
That's a good point, Representative. I think Heidi has done a great job of streamlining lots of language that was add-on on add-on on add-on, so it's much more readable and directive. A lot of work there. Anything else? Representative? Co-Chair.
Co-Chair Beyer. I want to touch on something that came up just a few minutes ago and make it very clear that we invite public testimony on this. This is a very complex document. We want our colleagues to weigh in. We want you all to weigh in, and we want to do this in a very public way. So if you're submitting written comments to the committee, assume that these are public documents, and when you come to testify, which we hope you will, because we know you all have strong opinions about either selective pieces or this process as a whole or this package as a whole, that on Monday night we will begin that process. We're trying to find a time on Tuesday so we can accommodate more public testimony should it be needed. We will meet again on Wednesday, so we're going to drive very hard to make sure that we provide an ample time for you all and those of us who may be watching us from afar to come in and let us know how you feel about this, because obviously, a lot of work has gone into this. We care deeply about it. We'd certainly like to have a project move forward, but now it's time for you all to speak up and let us know. Thank you to all of those of you who have been in our work groups that have been spending hours and hours down here already, because your participation has been really critical in how the 4 work groups were driven, plus the accountability work group. So I want to thank you on behalf of the entire committee for that, but we're halfway there now. And we're going to look to you to help guide us as we wrap this up, hopefully next week in 3 meetings if we can. But we're going to be very sensitive to making sure that people who want to be heard are heard. So thank you all for being here tonight.
Last call. Anybody else tonight?
Mr. Chair, Martin. One thing I have to just mention. You remember that when Heidi jumped from page 33 to page 138, and you were all kind of lost.
Skipped 100 that. Pages, yeah.
And those pages are primarily the blank sheets that we still are developing. And just to give you the idea, our models run about 2-3 bienniums. This package has a last increase in taxes on January 1st, 2026, which means the last full biennium where you would have that increase where we would have to balance through the cost responsibility would be the 27-29 biennium. So basically we are trying to put amounts of increases in taxes and in changes in the tables going all the way to 27-29. So that's part of the chore that we're doing. And a lot of these things are new. I mean, you have to feel very good about the package, that this is not your chocolate vanilla type registration fee and gas tax. There's all kinds of different things, new and creative, and actually taking, trying to go back to the concept of cost responsibility by, for example, putting the amounts on MPGs and for registration and electric vehicles and so on, in order to be able to get that. So all of these, and then going down to page 145, all of these are still under development, and hopefully we will be giving you more information as we are talking first in the highest level, and then by the time you're ready to have come into this package to go with the final amendment, we probably will be able to give you all these
That's a nice way of saying that Mazen is saying at the time we make a final decision on what we're going to send, he's got about 4 days at least of turning numbers to fill in the blanks.
And we love you for it, of course.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank everyone for all their work on this. I think that most of us in this room are very, very close to this process, and I think perhaps get caught up in the details, forgetting for a moment that everybody else in the state has little idea about what we do until they read about it in the newspapers. I would suggest, if you're enthusiastic about this package, probably should share that enthusiasm. There's a lot of opportunity to throw stones. There's lots of stuff that not to like. I would strongly recommend that you bring those issues up in a way that allows us to repair this thing, so that when we do run it out, we've diminished the chances of referral and increased the chances of actually getting the things passed. And I just, it's so easy to let time go by and suddenly we have a bill out there and people are all mad about it, instead of being enthusiastic about something that actually really needs to happen for this state. So I just really encourage you to call out what you think is wrong with the package in the most positive way possible. And we don't pretend that this is perfect. It's not. It's a draft. But I really do encourage you. Tell your groups this is a good thing, or it ain't going to happen. Just saying.
Senator Johnson?
I want to go back to what Mazen just said, and I know that we're loading staff up with an enormous amount of work, but I think it would be completely unreasonable for us to move this forward. I'm thinking like on the truck rates without all of the numbers being there. Mm-hmm. And I know it's just a gigantic amount of work, but I think you said that that would be the case before we move forward.
Yeah.
And
yes.
That is Coacher. Why
yes.
A week from Thursday, we will try to get consensus of what the final package will look like, to give the staff the time to amend it as you'd wish for a final package, because we won't have time to do it again. Okay. And with that, unless there's anything else, thank you all for your time you put in so far, and happy reading. We're adjourned.